Welcome to the Pacific Novel Project podcast, where we, which would be Steve and I, Jason, break down each other's drafts of our novels, and we're on our second draft. If you are interested in seeing our shitty first drafts, you can go to our website, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project, and there they are. You can see what we've done in the past, or you can just listen in now, and we just talk about what's working, what we think needs to be worked on, and just all things writing, pointing stuff out, the good, the bad, the ugly, the mediocre, the fantastic, the amazing.
Oh, I was going to say, if you have dual screens, you can look at both shitty rough drafts side by side and have a poo party.
Woohoo! Well, as usual, in some spots we get off track.
True. It does happen.
And we learn about and talk about new things.
All right. So I guess we're starting with Ghost of Silver Creek on this session. Last we left off on Ghost of Silver Creek, Elsa was teaching Avis how to milk a cow. Didn't really go over too well for Avis, but she kind of started to get it toward the end. She was a little jealous that she couldn't get her pail as full quickly. But hey, she was still learning. We learn a little bit of the backstory with the Nestors and the issues that are or that have come up between them and the Brodies. And we get introduced to, well, not to the McCanns directly, but they get referred to as people that the Johnstons know. And this is where they take the milk and they make cheese. And
yeah, the McMahons.
Oh, the McMahons. Yeah, sorry, the McMahons.
Pretty sure I'm sticking with that name this time.
All right, cool. And Elsa seems to possibly have a little thing for JJ and the way she talks about him. Okay, we leave off with Avis inviting Elsa to go out for a ride since Charles is out hunting and they don't know when he'll be back. So section 14, page 65.
Woo, 65.
Yeah. You're climbing up that ladder, man. I like this starting image. Elsa sat in front of Avis, her arms thrown wide as if she attempted to hug the mountains. Yeah, I just had a really good image off of that with her riding on the horse with her arms out, just the breeze coming, going through her hair. It was a cool image.
Yeah.
The girl's hair bounced in the wind and she laughed. It was the laugh of a child whose nose is tickled by a summer monarch or after a heart-pounding run home after a first kiss behind the schoolhouse. I also liked both of those images associated to the laugh and how that captures kind of the jovial sense of her laugh and also the excitement that's all wrapped up into that. So, yeah, that was cool. I liked that. See, Elsa, this is down towards the bottom of the page. Elsa let herself be pulled up, but Avis's assurance didn't prevent the girl from gripping Keela's mane until her knuckles turned white when the Palomino launched itself into a gallop. I had suggested maybe using a loud instead of let, because I think that a loud kind of has a little bit more agency to it than let, but suggestion I made there. The second line down, I struck itself because I thought her knuckles turned white when the Palomino launched into a gallop. I don't think itself was really needed.
Yes. What are you this time? You're anonymous quokka. I don't know what a quokka is.
I don't know what a quokka is either. Right, I'll have to look that up later. Yeah.
I'm gonna look it up right now so we can sidebar that.
Do it. We need a good sidebar. Right.
Continue on.
All right, down at the bottom of the page, Avis held Keela's mane with loose fingers, but the feel of the woman's arms on either side of her awakened Elsa's courage, and she sat up further and higher until she could not contain emotion overflowing within her. I like that moment between Elsa, Avis, and Keela. I mean, all three of them are there. This is kind of more, her courage is more inspired by Elsa's presence, though. But I like that Avis is becoming somebody that is inspiring for Elsa. And I hope to see more of this develop in their relationship. And I also like how Avis and Keela are both a vehicle for these moments where Elsa gets to let go and be a child again, even if just for a little bit, because she's really having to kind of adult up. And with all this turmoil going on with the Brodies and the Range War that's gearing up and kind of already underway.
Cool.
Let's see here. Page 66, second paragraph. Though the threads of life were stretched so thin, she could not see them. Avis felt the interconnection of all living things to one another, to her. And I remember this from the previous draft, and I like where it falls in this draft and the progress of Avis recovering, being accessible to the reader, even if the character isn't completely aware of it herself, but maybe she is. But it's a good thing to give the reader, you know, for that progress, to kind of show that she's kind of rebuilding herself, so to speak. They spoke the language of the lion and the elk, the tree and the fox, the owl and the insect, and Ina was their tutor. And I like that sentiment and kind of the detail of the connection they share and how they have a language that's unspoken, but that they still, you know, but is also still like quietly conveyed. All right, down at the bottom of page 66, Avis caught the girl's look and smiled. And I was just wondering if there was part of an expression that could be expounded upon here, maybe a frown, an arched eyebrow, or a troubled half smile.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, look is fine, but I thought I'd throw that out there. Just, I like the similarities between Keela and Chalk and how independent they can be, but also how loyal they are. While Chalk can be vocal, Keela has a lot of language through body and sounds, but they both still kind of have their independence, which is good. Down towards the bottom of page 67, Keela nodded his head up and down, then pressed it to her side. Is it just me, or can he understand what I'm saying? It sure seems like it. And this is in context of Elsa gets down off the horse, or Avis helps her down to the ground. And then Elsa's all, that was amazing. She threw her arms around the Palomino's neck. He's so fast, I could feel every muscle move. And I liked the body language from Keela here, and how it does show she's Keela's more aware than how just a horse is usually perceived by people. Keela's pretty much sentient, I would say. And I like that Elsa and Keela are also kind of developing a relationship and how this goes down, because Keela's kind of takes a tender moment with the little girl. And I thought that was cool. And then down at the bottom of the page, Avis didn't answer for a long moment before her shoulders slumped and her lips whispered, "This is where I woke up." But in her mind, she thought, "Where is the dagger?" And I'm curious about where the dagger is too. And I'm wondering if the Dark Rider that Joshua sees in the tree line is the one that picks up the dagger, because I know Joshua left it. And I'm curious if Avis will find the dagger, and will she not find it until the Dark Rider becomes known to her? So yeah, I'm curious. I like the mystery of the dagger starting here.
Sweet. I'm curious too.
Right on. That makes two of us then. But yeah, that's what I got.
All right. Yeah, sorry that was so short.
Nah, it's all good. I know you
crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, I know you had a lot on your plate this last week, so No worries, man.
I try to usually get at least 10 pages. Otherwise, I feel like I'm chipping our beautiful audience and the ugly one and the ugly ones too.
Oh, fair enough. Hey, you know, both have to exist. I mean, it's not like we have eugenics or anything.
I know. Damn it.
I know. I mean, if it was like feet, everybody would be beautiful. But of course, they'd also all be born in test tubes.
That's right. I want blue eyes. Damn it. All right. You want to hear about the quokka?
Yes. Tell me about the quokka.
The quokka is a Cetonyx brachyrhynchus, the only member of the genus Cetonyx. It is a small macropod about the size of a domestic cat. Like other marsupials in the macropod family, the quokka is herbivorous and mainly nocturnal. It kind of is like a cat-sized kangaroo, and it is found in southwest Australia, around the tip where Perth is. And did you know that each year, the Rottnest Island Infirmary treats dozens of patients, mostly children, for quokka bites?
Ooh, I was going to say there was a possible cute factor developing, but, you know, I mean, maybe if you had a tamed one, but then, you know, it's trying to tame an exotic animal, and there's some stigmas on that.
Yeah, that doesn't come across well.
I know, right? But, I mean, I guess they probably still have a cute factor, possibly. I don't know. I'll have to look at a picture of one, maybe.
Yeah, it's kind of cute. It's a little kangaroo.
Ah, cool. Hey, right on. Little kangaroo. I like it.
Hey, did you know that platypuses are poisonous?
I totally did not know that.
Yeah. I was watching some show, and this dude was like, you know, saw a platypus, and, ooh, what are you a little cute little guy? And they've got like these little barbs behind their back legs, and they stab you with it. And that guy almost died. He got helicoptered to the hospital, was, you know, critical condition for, for a couple days.
Oh, damn. Wow.
Yeah. Never saw Perry the Platypus bust those out on anybody.
Yeah, dude. I've never seen anything like that. Didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, I think when you're in Australia, a good rule of thumb is just assume everything's poisonous.
Fair enough, and definitely beware the platypus.
Moving on to Sierra Bonita Apartment in Hollywood Dreams. And I think we left off in the Sierra Bonita Apartment, right? No, we left off in Lou's Tavern.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so last episode, the guys were in Lou's Tavern, kind of talking about the case, kind of talking about what's going on in Europe. You know, it's 1940, early 1941. They found some Nazi links in their investigation of this murdered girl on the beach. And they are going to the Sierra Bonita Apartments, which is the apartment that the sister of the dead girl was living. And they found torched up. Okay, well, it wasn't torched. It wasn't burned or anything. But it was a mess. It had been rousted. And now they're going back there because while he was there talking to the supervisor, the manager, he'd seen that the guy had a Nazi armband kind of on his desk, kind of half hidden under the stuff. And I think he's going to go back there and question him or follow him to see what he's doing. So on page 60, chapter 5, Santa Bonita Apartment, May 25th, 1941. The first line, Monty's yawning from boredom. I just kind of suggested a line edit there to tighten it up a little bit. You know, they're doing the cop thing. They're on the car just watching stuff. I thought it was funny. They're only 3 hours. They're 3 hours and Monty was already complaining. I was thinking, man, dude's got no stamina.
He's a hothead.
Or is it stamina or stamina?
Stamina.
Whichever one it is, he ain't got it. Obviously a new detective.
Yeah, definitely no patience either.
Yeah, he'd be sitting there all day. I like the exchange here. Between them is kind of funny because he's slouching in the seat. Monty's slouching in the seat, grumbling, and Tomb's like, what? Monty's like, I got a spring poking me in the ass. Suck it up, kid, and quit moving so much. Do you have a spring up your ass, Tomb? Not a spring, but a pain is developing. Page 61. Yeah, so those are my only two comments. Just a couple of sentence changes, a couple words I deleted that I thought were unnecessary, and a little exchange about Tomb's piece of crap car. All right, So they see some guys pull up in a vehicle and get out. And Lloyd, the manager, comes out and they salute each other. Okay, so then they go in and then they come out with Lloyd. And it says here, the three men return to the street corner and shake hands. Oh, wait, let me back up. So after Monty's done complaining, a car pulls up and three guys get out wearing gray suits and fedoras. One of them slips something red into his coat pocket and follow Lloyd, the superintendent, into the building. So I had a couple thoughts here, which I don't see in the comment section for some reason. All right. I think this just needs to be cleaned up a little bit because you say they pull up and then follow Lloyd into the superintendent building. So Lloyd just kind of magically appears. It seems like they would see him come out. And maybe he comes out before the car gets there because he's waiting for him, knows that they're there. Or maybe they come out, pull out, get out of the car, and mill around and wait for Lloyd to come out. Or maybe Lloyd doesn't come out and they just go inside. Either way, the way it's written right now, Lloyd just kind of shows up.
Oh, yeah. Lloyd was supposed to be in the third guy in the car. I'll have to make that more clear.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I didn't really make that clear. I really didn't.
All right. Then on top of page 61, the three men return to the street and corner and shake hands. You just established Lloyd is one of those three men, right?
Yes.
Okay. I just said I'd like to see how much time passes. Because it's like they go into the building. I mean, how long are they in that building for? 2 minutes? 20 minutes?
Okay.
I'm wondering what they're going into that building for. Obviously, we're not going to know that because we're from Toon's perspective. But from a writing perspective, is this like just one of those things you put there randomly so we have somebody to follow? Or were they there for a purpose? They're kind of... So I'm assuming the red thing was the armband. So if he's conscious enough to take off his armband, why is he not self-conscious enough that he's doing Third Reich salutes in the middle of the street? Or is Lloyd the guy that took off the armband?
Lloyd's the guy that took off the armband.
All right. So you should clarify that too.
All right.
You want me to type that or you got it?
No, I got it. I got it. All right.
Okay. Then that'll make more sense. If you change that, then it's all make... Then, because you say here that Lloyd does a half-ass Reich salute.
Right? Yeah.
Ballsy.
Well, they really had no fucks to give up until Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I see you responded to my comment. Yeah, because I didn't know. I know it wasn't a secret. I've seen the pictures of the giant Nazi flags and halls and stuff. But I was just...
Oh, dude, they...
I didn't know they were dropping those salutes on the streets and stuff too.
Oh, dude, they straight up marched in full Nazi regalia with with Reich poles, with flags, and like city parades.
Yeah, ugh, man, things never change, huh?
I know, right? Ugh.
Now they're driving off and they're following those two guys, which brings us to the next section: Murphy Ranch, May 25th, 1941. So this is what I was talking about dates in another session. Like it's the same, like, do you need to say May 25th, 1941? Cause we haven't changed days yet. Like I can see you putting the dates when we change a day, but it's still the same day. Also, what's that font? I like that font.
Oh, that font is
Stardust something.
Stardust stencil.
Looks good. Looks appropriate for your little titles there.
I know. Right. Right now, yeah, I'm kind of keeping the dates just for my own reference. That way I don't lose myself on a section.
All right. Oh, the Cuoco went away, and now you're you.
Interesting. I wonder why the Cuoco went away. I see you were commenting as Depressed Frog.
Yeah, I think that's my daughter's account.
That's awesome.
That could be a random name it gave her, or she could pick something like that, because that sounds like something she would do. Hopefully she's not really depressed.
Yeah, hopefully not.
I don't know. She kind of doesn't give a fuck about anybody thinks so. People like that don't usually seem to be depressed.
I know, right? Those A-type personalities, man. No fucks to give.
All right. Murphy Ranch, May 25th, 1941. So they follow this car up to La Crescenta. he stops. They pull off on a dirt road, and he stops, and he hides the car near a copse of trees.
I totally snagged that word.
I know. It's a good word.
It is a good word.
And go to page 62. Yeah, I didn't really... My only comment was here was 4 miles felt super generic. 3 miles, 4 miles. You're not getting to La Crescenta in that short time. I don't know. I don't even know the exact miles. It just felt generic.
Yeah, fair enough. I was just kind of a... Yeah, I wasn't sure what to... How to pass that time. So I was like, I'll throw something in.
I feel the passage of time would work better. Like, hey, for 30 minutes we drove wherever.
Okay, that works.
Page 62, they are taking a hike. They're going to walk up the rest of the way and be sneaky. Just a couple, lined out a couple words, a couple extra words. I didn't really say anything to the bottom. The binoculars thing was weird. They both have binoculars. He was like, hey, I'm getting binoculars out of the car. But then Monty, then they got up there and he shares them with Monty. And Monty's like, hey, I already got some. And I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like, well, where the hell did those things come from? And when he say that he had some, who the fuck carries binoculars around?
True. And yeah, it did. In retrospect.
I'm wondering if they can use them on the stakeout.
Yeah, I should probably have one of them, have them for the stakeout, and just maybe not have both of them have them.
And they don't have to park so close either, because they don't want to be seen. So it makes sense if they had binoculars at the stakeout.
Right. For sure.
Yeah, just a comment. All right, I point to where I have been watching the bustle inside of what was looking to be a compound. Right there past those trees. I'm not sure what looking to be a compound was kind of meant. I don't know. That was just an odd reference to me. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. Not a big deal, but maybe something to peek at.
Okay, I'll take a look at it.
And that crosses us on. And that crosses us to page 63. So this is Murphy Ranch. And this is the place that you researched that was an actual Nazi Bund camp back in the day.
Yep. They were straight up trying to build a Nazi White House in preparation for the Nazi invasion.
Of California?
Well, that's where they thought maybe that Hitler would want to live. I don't know. Dude, these people were wackadoos, man. Yeah, even...
Was that an American Nazi thing or a German Nazi thing?
A little bit of both.
Because a lot of confidence. You think you'd just march your ass from New York to California like that.
I mean, during this time, the FBI was actively chasing like Nazi spies in the country. And so it was a little bit of both.
Well, if I was going to take over America, I'd probably move to LA too.
Right. It's always sunny.
All right. And then I just had a question. Because they get up there and then the car shows up. And I was wondering if that was a super shortcut on foot. Cause it seemed like the car would be there first.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on that. I think, I need to make the Plymouth already there and parked by time they get up to where they're viewing from. Yeah, that was my mistake.
Yeah. And Tomb. Just this, the rest of this page is just Tomb feeling like crap. Cause he's an alcoholic who just ran up a hill.
Pretty much, yeah.
That was my only question on that page so far. Sure, next time I'll read it,
I'm sure you will.
Page 64. They're just having a little discussion of what they should do. A lot of the compound's hidden by trees. There's bulldozers and stuff. And they're like, wow, what's going on? So they decide that they are going to go back at night. Maybe not that night, but at night, and check things out. Watch it, kid. I can be in Mexico before they even found your body out here, I say. Or you can just blame it on Nazis. They laughed. Yeah, you know me. I got a dark sense of humor, but that didn't seem to land right.
Yeah, in retrospect, I agree with you.
So then they go back to Santa Bonita apartment. This last bottom of 64, I just deleted the building because when you follow him inside, obviously he's going to the building. And him, I mean Lloyd, because they are going to roust Lloyd. And when we get to page 65, this is where they start asking him questions. Toon pulls out a folded paper from his suit pocket and holds it up. I got your warrant here, bitch. And yeah, I was wondering, Toon's sneaky. I wonder if that really is a warrant, because I couldn't remember.
Nope.
Just being sneaky, right?
being sneaky too.
I was like, I remember them talking about something like that earlier, but I don't remember it actually happened. So I didn't really say it.
Nope, it didn't.
So I didn't really say anything on this page. They arrest him, page 66. Monty reads the rights. I don't remember when the rights came in. That sounds like something you would you say here. I don't think you understand my question. So Monty,
I didn't.
Monty reads Lloyd's his rights, his Miranda. I don't remember when the Miranda started. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that was something I put in just in case that I thought. Well, I might have to change that later. Which I probably, if my memory serves me correctly, I think I do have to change that.
Okay. Well, I'd be curious to know when that started. I suppose I could Google it myself, but I'll let you take care of that.
Yeah, I'll do it now.
And then you spelled Lucky's, the cigarettes, IES, and I thought it was spelled with a LUCKY. Oh, God. You know, I'm going to Google it.
Oh, yeah. Miranda rights weren't established until 1966.
66.
So, yeah.
Whew.
Yep. So definitely going to be changing that.
Yeah, I think Lucky's should be LUCKY apostrophe S, because you're saying, hey, they're Luckies, as in they belong to Lucky Strikes, I think. Yeah, that's my take on it. But Luckies, IES, makes it sound like it's plural, like you had a bunch of them.
Well, you do have 20 Class A filtered or unfiltered cigarettes.
Yeah, but you're, say, a pack of Luckies. You didn't say...
Ah. Fair enough. Fair enough.
The pack is singular, even though it's made of the multiple.
Too true. Too true. Touché, sir.
The wolf pack is strong.
Indeed.
We are like sticks.
And we welcome fire. We are the Lord of Light.
All right, they take Lloyd out to the car. Take him downtown. We're going to have a discussion downtown. Because he's got, I don't know, he's got Mein Kampf and books and red armband and all that stuff. None of which I think is illegal, but I mean, it's the 40s. Cops doing whatever the hell they want.
And it's symbols at this point, man. I mean,
I watched L.A. Confidential again a couple weeks ago.
That was a great movie. I like that movie.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Man, I think it was. I don't think it was great, but I thought it was really good. It was interesting.
Well, I thought it captured the nature of kind of L.A. during that period pretty well.
Yeah, I like the actors. I like Kevin Spacey's character a lot.
Yeah, his character was interesting. Kevin Spacey's kind of a dirtbag, but. Well, not kind of a dirtbag. He isn't
all dirtbags. He is a dirtbag,
but yeah.
So they arrest him, go down to Wilcox Police Station, May 25th, 1941. You did what? Abbott asked me, standing up on his chair. So the rest of this page, I didn't really say nothing, but this is where Abbott's a little pissed because he thinks it's a premature arrest without a warrant. And he's going to try and backdoor the warrant, you know, get. So talk somebody to doing a warrant and, you know, signing it for earlier that day or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where I was going with, but I don't know if I'm going to keep that part because I've been doing a little bit of research on probable cause and arrests without warrants. And there's some, especially in 41, I mean, there's definitely some.
Yeah, some a little leeway.
Yes. Fast and loose.
Page 67. Just the more of the conversation I just talked about with Abbott. I just made one grammar change there. So the last half of that page, they go into their interrogation room. They're like, okay, Lloyd, what's with the armband? We're not in Berlin, buddy. Monty says, come on, Lloyd, give us anything. Cause we got you for what's going on at the ranch. We think you murdered the girl. That's what they start saying on page 68. They're kind of doing a little good cop, bad cop thing. Although I wasn't sure because there's a point like here toward the bottom of. Oh, no, that's the next page. Okay. So this page, they start asking about Nancy, the dead one.
Yes.
I got to use that. Both of our Elses are alive. That's how I got trying to remember that.
Yes.
You just played Nazi on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So he just claims he works at the camp for some extra money and that's all he does. And so they ask him about the apartment. Going into page 69, he's like, hey, I don't know what happened. And the way it was written earlier, he seems kind of surprised by the mess in the apartment. Now it's here at the bottom of this page, page 69, that I was wondering if Toom seemed to be wondering if Monty was being a little bit too much of a nice cop. And then I was wondering if Monty thought that they were going too far too. But then the last part, he says, relax too, and we got him where we want him. So maybe I was just reading into that because Toom was wondering. What were you trying to portray there?
With the line, relax Toom, we got him where we want him, with that line?
Starting above that, come on, Toom, Captain. The captain said no rough stuff, Monty says, his voice more calm than I expected for the routine. You don't sound too committed to that, kid, I say, looking back at Monty. And I think he means committed to not doing the rough stuff. It's not my ass he's put a boot up, is it? I think he's referring to Abbott messing with him. So at that point, it sounded like the good cop, bad cop thing was kind of falling apart. And then combine that with the end where Monty escorts the guy out, Lloyd out, and says, hey, thanks for your cooperation. But then says, hey, don't worry. We got him where we want him. Let's see where he goes. So I wasn't sure if you were trying to portray that the good cop, bad cop thing was kind of falling apart, or if Toom just didn't know what Monty was up to, but Monty was really up to something, and that was letting this guy go and following him.
Yeah, a little bit of both. I wanted the good cop, bad cop thing to fall apart, because, I mean, it's kind of cliche, but, I mean, it also happens. I mean, it's pretty common.
I was wondering if it had something to do with Monty being kind of a goody-two-shoes.
Yeah, I mean, I think really kind of where I feel Monty's at with it is, I mean, he'd probably give the guy a couple black eyes himself, but he's gonna stay more by, you know, caution, and he's kind of feeling that if, and I think more where Monty is with it is to kind of keep that rough stuff back, and since there's potentially a bigger thing going on than just this one guy, I think Monty is like, no, we're gonna follow this guy and see where he goes, see what his game plan is after he gets out of here.
Okay.
And see if it exposes anything.
I think they should have the discussion. Because he said, by he, I mean, so Toom says, this better work. But at this point, Monty hasn't given him a plan or anything. So I was wondering if maybe they could step out and he's like, hey, Monty, what the fuck? And Monty's like, hey, Toom, let's let this guy go. Because I think he's going to lead us to something better, bigger. And then Toom be like, well, this better work.
All right. Yeah, I like that, actually. I think that's something that, yeah, I should definitely do. That would definitely kind of help isolate what's being played on here.
Yeah. Because you have part of that in here with him saying this better work. It just seems like it feels like a piece of conversation is missing because it skips to letting him go to that line.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And then page 70, we get downtown Los Angeles. May 25th, 1941. All right, so they follow him, and he goes to... Oh, because they were asking him, excuse me, they were asking about the watch, too, and whose watch is it? You know, this is a big piece of evidence. We're going to find it. That's what they're trying to do, right? See where Lloyd's going to go, see if he's going to go to the man with the watch. So they follow him, and he goes to... God, horse feathers. Horse feathers. All right, they follow him to a diner. And they suspect Lloyd's making a phone call. And a little bit later, the black car shows up and picks him up. And Toom thinks they're going to Murphy Ranch. But they end up going to dun-dun-dun, the Richter Art Gallery, May 25th, 1941. I asked in this opening paragraph when they pull up to Richter's Art Gallery, because Richter is a influential person that used to frequent Toom's speakeasy, if we had skipped something because... He hadn't even gone to talk to him about the watch yet, even though he had talked about doing the watch.
Was that a question? Or would you like me to...
That was a statement, and now I'm reading what you wrote under my comment, which maybe you should just say out loud for the sake of radio.
I mean, pretty much this was an experiment that apparently doesn't work. I wanted them to do an intentional release of Lloyd with intent to follow him, hopefully back to some sort of a source. I didn't want to do the ranch again. But the gallery isn't the right move either. I thought this would maybe get Richter under some scrutiny right off the bat. I mean, because Secretary's been playing interference for him, throughout the first part of this book with like, oh, he's out of the country. He's out of the country every time they try to get an appointment with him. But I guess it's entirely too early to kind of throw the art gallery out here yet.
Yeah, it is kind of too early. I think I'd like Toom to talk to him first so we can establish their relationship.
Yeah, I agreed.
I mean, if this was a movie, as soon as I see Richter, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's a bad guy. So it's not like super hiding it. But then just like, boom, like, hey, we haven't even met Richter yet. And it's already he's involved with the Kooky Ranch. As Monty says, that Kooky Ranch. Page 71, you shred wheat, I respond. Oh, you shredded wheat. What does that mean?
It's 30 slang for you said it.
Wow. I wonder how that originated. That's weird.
I know, right? I wondered the same thing. I couldn't really find a etymology about it, though.
All right. And I didn't like this whole pilfering. I don't feel this way. I know this. With Grady, like every time he was mentioned, you had to get into the racism thing. And now Richard just can't be a dude. He did something nice. You're busting on the philanthropy and the criminal elements of the war and stuff. And I know all this is like super near and dear to your heart and things, but just, I don't know, it just kind of doesn't feel right to me in this story.
Well, I mean, the World War One art looting and black market stuff, I mean, that's kind of what Richter's built around. I don't know what else to do with him that still establishes him as a dealer, and that also where he gets his wealth from.
Why can't he just be a dealer who got his wealth legitimate?
I guess I could go that route.
Or maybe that under part is a little secret. Or maybe, yeah, he did it a little bit. But I don't know, man. The way you describe it is like he was a Nazi in World War II pulling gold teeth out of Jews at the camps and stuff.
Hey, war-torn areas that people abandon, it spoils a war, right?
I don't know. He just feels cliche to me, I guess. I think that's it.
Ah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, hey, I could always try writing him a little bit different and see how he comes off.
I did like, man, I just like the idea of him being more friendly with them too. Like them being, if not close friends, like, hey, friends from the old days or whatever.
Okay. Maybe that's a better way to do it. You know, not have Toom have a stigma or an ill will associated to him.
Yeah, like he doesn't need to be squeaky clean because, I mean, we know Toom's not squeaky clean, right? I mean, that guy was rum running as a cop. Which, oh, by the way, let's talk about that, how judgmental that is.
What's that?
Him being a rum runner as a cop.
Hey, that's civil disobedience.
Being all, Richter friggin' smuggled some paintings or took advantage of something. He didn't save anything, although he did kind of save stuff. I find myself siding with Richter here.
Hey, bootleggers were civil disobedience.
I don't know. I just thought it was funny. From all our discussions with Richter, like you never before mentioned that she, like, oh, hey, he can be an art looter. Just everybody's got a dark side.
Right.
You don't trust anybody, Steve.
I don't trust anybody.
Too young to be so ruined.
There's reasons for that. No, I'll try writing Richter a little bit different and see how he plays out. I'm totally down for exploring that.
Even if he is shady, man. Toom, you're a hypocrite.
Well, all philanthropists are shady.
And, man, that's it. Man, that's it. We didn't even get to do, we did like two shows in a row with our Southern accents, and we didn't even get to do that this time. So just hoping to keep it going.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, well, what can you do, you know?
Yeah, maybe next time. I think that's all I got. I mean, I just kind of gave this. This is all new information to me, different from your last draft. So I just kind of went through it and pointed out my obvious questions. Structure and stuff is looking pretty good so far. I mean, the museum thing came is probably a little bit too soon, but other than that, I think it's shaping up.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I agree. The art gallery thing is too soon, and I definitely still have to figure out who Richter is going to be. As I was saying, this was kind of an experiment for this part.
Yeah, he's a new character. Wasn't even in the last one, so.
Nope. Yeah. So I'm
do a lot of fiddling.
Yeah, I'm still filling this character out, kind of trying to figure out who the hell Anton Richter is.
Oh no, he was in the last draft, but just not until the end.
Yeah, not until the end, and it was really brief too. I mean, I never fleshed them out or anything.
Well, you didn't come up with the Richter concept until toward the end of that draft either, I don't think.
Yep, pretty much. And one question I got for you. Where do you think would be a good place to have them follow Lloyd to, other than the gallery and other than Murphy Ranch? Because I kind of don't want to go back to Murphy Ranch yet. But, I mean, I guess I could.
At that moment in time, I'm not sure. Like, if you were to switch it up so they weren't being put off by Richter's secretary and get that interview and discussion and their background and relationship sooner, then having him follow him to Richter's when you're ready to get Richter involved more as a possible suspect, I think would work fine.
Okay.
Because I mean, for the last couple of weeks, I have been asking you, when is he going to go interview Richter? I don't know. But at this moment, if you wanted to keep the timeline the way it is right now, good place for him to go. Did they give him his shit back? His like book and his armband?
I don't know. I didn't think about it. I guess I didn't.
What if... Oh, man, you know what? I don't know where he could go, but I was just thinking, what if wherever he went, I mean, they can either lose him or he just doesn't show up again or something. What if he ends up being in a body discovered somewhere?
Surprise, surprise. That's kind of where I was thinking about going with it. So I'm glad we're on the same page on that, because I was planning on actually having Lloyd turn up dead somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, is Lloyd just a guy who works for them? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, I mean,
is he a Nazi, or is he just like, hey, you got to wear this because you're on our compound type thing? You're doing the lawn, so you need to wear this.
Oh man, no, he's definitely a Nazi. Definitely not not honest about his intentions and stuff like that. Which I want to try to get more out about his role in things at some point.
Well, poor Lloyd. Well, he's a Nazi, so fuck him.
Yeah, I mean, he needs to be punched in the face a lot. Just saying.
Nazis. So, any more questions for me?
No, I don't think so.
I guess that is the end of this session. And if you are enjoying our editing ramblings, please like, please subscribe, please comment. Comment can be anything. It could be about how awesome we are. It could be about how dumb we are. It could be about what you like about writing, what you like about reading, what you like about our stories, what you hate about our stories. If you want to think Stephen King is the sexiest man on the planet, whatever. We're just, we like talking about writing and other creative stuff. So just comment about anything. And if you like what you're hearing, you can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/Pacific Novel Project, where you will find the 200 short story challenge. 200 short stories? Wow, 200 short stories. That's a lot of short stories.
That is a lot of short stories.
200 word short story challenge, which we're hoping one day, as this blossoms into a big thing, we can turn that challenge into like some kind of contest with you know, actual tangible rewards and stuff. But we'll talk about those stories. It's just basically put up a picture and you write 200 words, a little story that goes with the picture. And we also have the Bring Your Own Book Club, which, what are we doing this month, Steve?
Oh, The Returned by Jason Mott. Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, did you finish that? Oh, yeah, I know. Yes. You finished that because you went to that alumni book, that book.
Yes, I did. It was fun, too. It was pretty good.
Cool. So Bring Your Own Book Club, that is for patrons only. I think that is the $2 level. And at the $25 level, we will do, which is only limited to 10 people, I think. We'll have a book club session with our listeners live, and we will send you a digital copy from whatever format of your choice, Kindle, Nook, whatever. And so then you don't even need to bring your own book because we give you the book.
Yes, we do.
So hopefully you like digital books because I know some people, I mean, I love Kindle because I got like 800 books on it, but I also like, you know, holding the book too. I like both. Both have their things.
I like both as well.
Although, I don't know. Maybe we could do regular books, too. That just seemed like a simple way to do it. But, you know, regular books is something we could look into. So if you prefer the regular book, like, oh, hey, I like to do this. I like the regular book. Give us feedback on that. If you think our tiers are kind of cool, then great. If you think our tiers are sucking, you're like, hey, I'd like to do this, but I'd be more interested in these things. You know, that's great, too, because I'm not a psychic or a mind reader.
Neither am I. It'd be kind of cool to be one, but, you know, hey, that's okay.
I don't know. Do I want to know what everybody thinks about me? Maybe I do, so I can just tell them to go fuck themselves. Cause...
Well, dude, think about how much money you could make gambling.
No, that's true. Man, that's where everybody always goes, we're going to the pass. Don't bet on any horse races.
I'm going to bet on them all.
I'm going to go play poker. I'm going to read his mind.
Right?
That's where the psychic stuff always seems to go to.
Pretty much, yeah.
Hey, did you watch Endgame yet?
Yes, I did.
All right. Okay. Well, let's talk about that another time.
All right. Sounds good.
I'm tempted to talk about it now, but let's just let everybody go.
Got to let them go sometimes, you know? You just got it.
Let them go. If you love someone, let them go. Is that the words of that song? No, I messed that. Totally messed that song.
If you puke and she bolts, it was never meant to be. But if you blow chunks and she comes back, she's yours.
What? That doesn't even rhyme.
Back to Wayne's World. I think I got that backwards, though. I think I got the line backwards.
I'm a cretin. I demand my poetry rhymes.
Oh, okay.
All right. Good night to you, sir, and good night to everybody else.
All right. Good night to you all. Good night, Jason. And it's been fun.
All right. And, yep, join us for our next podcast, which will be for The Returned by Jason Mott.